You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Nice to have you back here up north on a Monday morning, 8:06. Good morning. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison Studio A2. John and Gordy going to join us from Madison Studio A1 in just a moment here. And then coming up at the bottom of the hour, we will play back our interview with Tom Nelson, the Outagamie County executive, who talked to us in August upon publication of his new book about the Edmund Fitzgerald, which sank 50 years ago tonight. And he talks about the ship itself and also some of the conditions, economic and political, that somehow paralleled the fate of that freighter that was lost in Lake Superior 50 years ago. So again, that's coming up at 8:35. But first, let's check in with our friends John and Gordy from our Civic Media station down in Madison, 92.7 WMDX, or through the Civic Media app. John and Gordy, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hello.
Good morning, Pat.
It's nice to see you all. Were either of you part of the crowd that was storming the field when Bucky won a game, a football game over Washington, 13-10?
Wow. No, I wish I was. We were encouraging here. The fans, the students get out during these games, even when they lose, and have fun out in the stands like they used to when we always used to lose. Remember those days?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're getting back to them. Go out there,
have some fun, right? And then all of a sudden, whammo, they win the game.
Yeah.
Everybody just went out in the field, and it was just a madhouse out there. I would have loved being out there.
Yeah.
So it's you
great
guys.
Thing to see. Yeah.
You were responsible for the rabble rousers.
Yeah.
Although,
well, yeah, we got everybody to go out. Yep.
Sure. Although I think if you're going to have rabble rousers at a football game, you're more likely to see it tonight because you got Philadelphia fans coming to Green Bay.
It's also
one of the gold package games, which tends to mean you'll see more, you know, visitors who were able to get tickets to Lambeau Field.
I'm not familiar with the gold package.
Once upon a time, the Packers played half their games at Lambeau Field and half their games at County Stadium. And the gold package was for the three or four County Stadium games. And then when all the games were shifted back to Lambeau, those gold package holders, they could keep their tickets, but they had to go all the way up to Lambeau to use them. And so the folks on the gold package, they've gotten this reputation now. Many of them don't want to make the drive, and so they put them up for sale, you know, online. And they say, tend to see more, you know, hostile visiting fans because it was easier for them to get tickets on these gold package games.
Wow.
And, in fact, Kristen Lyerly's partner, a police officer in Green Bay, was talking about just dreading this. Philadelphia fans, it's night, it's a prime time game. So they will have been drinking beer all day leading up to this. Not like Packer fans don't drink beer, but we don't engage in the misbehavior that Philadelphia fans are known for. So here's hoping the Eagles fans behave themselves at Lambeau tonight. And here's hoping I don't get too much hate mail from the Milwaukee people going, I've never sold my gold package ticket online. How dare you?
Yeah,
right?
I'm sure they have.
yeah, exactly. So we've got a lot of football going on here, but we've also got some winter prep. We were working, for example, on our Christmas card and our Christmas letter and talking about lights and decorations and things. We'll get to that in a sec here, but another sign of the season is when some of the critters decide that they need someplace warm to go as the temperature changes. And in John's case, that involves a little mouse problem. And I don't mean your computer. I mean the little squeaky kind.
I have that problem too. But yeah, no, you know, we have mice always entering our home around our kitchen sink for some reason, underneath the kitchen sink. And so that's a great way to stop them by putting traps down there. And I ran out of traps and I went to the hardware store to look at these traps, and there are a whole bunch of different kinds of traps. And one is where you put the batteries in it, and as soon as that mouse gets in there, it sets the battery off and electrocutes them immediately.
What?
Kills them down. Yes. And there's a little blue light that lights up on it when it has killed a mouse.
Worst blue light special ever. Like
right?
Fried exactly. Mouse.
Yeah.
Fried mouse. You used to get that at the Kmart snack bar when they had blue light specials. That's why they went out of business in part. But holy cow.
I know. It's this new technology is
out. Is it called Old Sparky, like the electric chair? Or what is this?
It could be.
Thing?
It really should be, actually.
I
have one that isn't battery operated. It allows them to go in and traps them alive, so you don't have to, you know, sometimes the snap traps keep those mice alive.
They then kinda... you take them outside, and of course they never find their way back to your house.
I think they do. I go across the street into a field over there, and I drop them over
there.
Oh,
that should make all the difference. Yes.
Well, I'm hoping they get killed crossing the street. That's what I'm hoping for. You know, it's their fault.
Yes, because I see so much mouse kill on the roads, you know. Nothing like so much more than deer that are out there. We're talking to John and Gordy from our Madison station, WMDX. And my mom thought she was going the humane way, not getting the trap, but getting the sticky paper thing. Ooh. And they get onto the sticky paper and they get stuck and then they can't infest the house. But it's not until you catch the first one that you realize that the downside of this is now you got to kill the mouse or find some other way to flush it or dispose of it or do something with it. And it could be that maybe she still has maybe the memories of the one time as like a 4 or 5 year old, I was reaching into the lower cupboard, like under the sink or something, and got my fingers in a mouse trap.
And no.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You know how you have very few memories of your early, early, early childhood, unless it was like something traumatic.
Like
my
that.
Two earliest memories were one, tornado damage at about that same time in life, and the mousetrap one. You're like, those you remember. You know, the other days, they kind of go away. Go ahead.
I've got another part of this story about the mouse under my sink. This morning I have a different mouse trap now. It traps the mice. They get into it, they can't get out. And it's alive, and I just flip the door open on the back of it and dump them out in a field alive. So I don't have to deal with killing them anymore. But this morning there are two mice in this little contraption. And now they're both trapped in this thing.
Oh.
They're huddled together, and I'm thinking, if a third mouse goes in there, I'm doomed. You know.
So when I get home,
I've got to go out and dump them. I wanted to do it this morning, but sometimes they run back at you if you dump them out in the field.
And they want revenge.
And if it's at night, I can't see if they're running back at me. And I feel like I'm
watching the old Monty Python skit with the killer rabbit. You know, run away, run away.
Oh, I know. This is like a Curb Your Enthusiasm moment. I'm having trouble at home.
This is just great. All right, well, we're talking to John Gordy about the problems getting rid of mice if you don't want to kill them, because you know they're just little God's creatures. In the same way that we don't have fly swatters, we just shoo the fly out the door so that it can live another day. No, wait, we don't. We kill them because they're pests.
They still use that sticky paper. That seems like the cruelest thing.
I know. I know. I mean,
well, they get caught in webs. So I guess the sticky paper is just fine. You know what? I don't care about flies, but it's mice.
But you want to be humane to the mouse.
But the old snap traps, you don't always kill the mice.
Right.
And
sometimes,
that's why I am trying to trap them live now without injuring them and just setting them free.
I think it's a great game. You know, it's like playing tag or hide and seek. And you caught them and now take them out to the field and they're going to come back and try again. And whatever occupies you, John, to get you through the winter. You know, if it involves playing with a mouse and going on the back and forth, all for it. More power to you.
Yeah.
John and Gordy, you can hear them on our Civic Media station, Madison 92.7 WMDX, or through the app here as well. Okay, so you've got that sign of the season.
Yes.
But you've also got, like I mentioned, getting ready for the holidays. Some people are way into it already. The decorations are up. They're already wearing Christmas sweaters and things. I've got a niece who just the day after Thanksgiving is just head to toe Christmas, wall to wall Christmas. Either one of you, are you a household that gets extra early into the spirit, or are you like as close to Christmas as possible?
No.
No, John doesn't put up anything. I put up a little bit of stuff around the house, but around the apartment, but nothing outside.
We always get a tiny little Christmas tree. We put on a table in the room, and then we decorate it with all the ornaments that we still have. Good. Superhero ornaments, Star Trek ornaments, stuff like that. But I'm fascinated by how many Christmas sweaters there are now at the stores, and they really make them elaborate and really grotesque purposely.
Yeah. They have ugly
it's really sweater fun. Contests. It's fun to see.
Yeah.
All right. And I don't know if you have a Kohl's department store you're at.
Yep.
But if you go into Kohl's, I got to tell everybody statewide, they have the greatest gag gifts ever. Every aisle is filled with gag gifts. You have to go there. They have some of the most fantastic gag gifts ever.
Really?
They do.
Okay. Yes. All right. Consider yourself warned.
So there.
Get a little something back from Kohl's, do you? Gift card or something.
A lot of money for that one.
At some point, they're sending a letter saying, "Don't say gag so often when you're talking about Kohl's." We get it. The gag gifts are in fact there. We were working on the Christmas card and the Christmas letter with the updates and
You sent a Christmas letter about the whole family and what everybody.
That's the point I'm getting to. We used to send all the time when our girls were young. Here's all the things we went to Disney World or whatever the case may be. Yeah. And we have to be careful now, or at least I do. Maybe I'm being cynical here. I mean, I love my girls, but they're adults. They got families. They do their thing. And so I see people like my age, and so much of the letter is about kids and grandkids. Well, their kids haven't lived with them for a decade or more. And my other pet peeve, if you will, is when the Christmas card only shows the kids or the grandkids. It's like, I don't know your kids. I don't know. I know you. What's new with you? How was your year? I want to see you.
You're
and,
my kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we kind of went through that with the photos here. It's like, well, let's put this one in this one. They can send those. How about our vacation where we went to? And at some point, I'm starting to wonder if Sherry's just trying to nudge me out of the picture quite literally on this Christmas card thing.
Wow.
But we, you put that together and I look back at the younger ones, or when I was younger, the Christmas letters, and boy, I was just so, what's the word I'm looking for? Sarcastic. You think I'm sarcastic now?
Yeah.
I look at that and I'm like, I'm amazed anybody was friends with me looking at this back then, and which of course at the time I thought that was funny stuff. That's some real writing talent. But you look back at these things and you just kind of cringe going, ooh, how did that get greenlit? But we did. And people say, oh, we miss when your letters were really funny. I'm like, you do? Okay.
You have the Midwest sense of humor, the sarcastic,
passive aggressive. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The dry sense of humor.
Yep.
So everybody appreciates that. See?
They do. And I like when people do it. I've just found I just don't have that same. I did like it at the time. I'm just much more sedate now. And I save it for the morning for the radio. I've got friends like you to bounce all this stuff off of.
Yeah.
We're talking to John and Gordy from 92.7 WMDX in Madison. You can catch their show on the Civic Media app if you're not in the Madison area. Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 o'clock. Quick check on sports. We've got the Packers, of course, playing the Philadelphia Eagles. Coverage begins at 5 o'clock, the pregame, on stations in Richland Center, Park Falls, Racine, and Wautoma. There's also some Badger women's basketball on some of the other stations across the Civic Media radio network coming up later on this Monday evening as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Nice to have you back. We'll continue chatting with John and Gordy here in just a moment. First, a reminder, you can sign up for the Up North News daily newsletter. Head to upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the top banner. If you missed it, a week before last, I believe it was, we talked to Carmen Solis. She's originally from Mexico. She's lived in Altoona for the past 15 years or so and started a successful small business, and recently spoke to the Wisconsin Latino Chamber of Commerce about, you know, achieving her dream of being an immigrant and starting a small business here in America, and now is, you know, employing people. And so you can, if you missed the show, you can read about it in today's edition of the newsletter. Sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. And of course, if you follow the show as a podcast, you can go back and hear that particular segment. Head over to Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. John and Gordy again from 92.7 WMDX. We were talking about Christmas prep and cards and letters and decorations and things. And guys, the other thing that's starting for us is catalogs. I don't know how we got on so many catalog lists, or maybe it's everybody. I don't know about you guys, but officially the first two have arrived. This one's from J. Jill. But the very first one, new skis. Who needs bacon?
Oh,
new skis from up in Wittenberg. Well,
I'd like to get that. Wow.
I will probably get three more new skis catalogs before Christmas. We'll get the ones from, is it O&H Kringle in Racine? Mm-hmm. And then we'll get so many clothing catalogs. And we don't order a lot. I don't know that we order much of anything from catalogs, but that is not stopping the companies. That stack of catalogs is going to be probably 4 inches high by the time all is said and done. Do you guys, sounds like you don't get nearly the mail volume we do from catalogs.
No,
I might get a Farm and Fleet catalog and maybe a couple of others like that, but not like the old days.
Well, I got a Costco.
Yeah, do you get a Costco?
Well, because I live there.
He does live at Costco.
They do help me out every once in a while by giving me guidance in what aisles I need to live in each and every month. Here's the thing, you know, wasn't it Spencer Gifts or, you know, one of those catalogs with all these really inexpensive gifts and items that you never thought were possible, but somebody invented them.
Yes, I mean, Hammacher Schlemmer is one of them, or my wife keeps calling it the Hammacher Schlemmer catalog, and it's got so many gadgets, and for years and years I'd look and go, oh, that's cool, that's cool, and that's cool. Yeah. And now we'll get, like I said, two or three of those during this season, and I'll look through the whole thing and go, there is nothing there I want. It's just you look at it and go, who'd get that? Who needs that? But it'll happen. It'll happen. Well, all you gotta do is buy one, you know.
The Sears catalog and the JCPenney catalog in the old days, you know, they used to be 2 inches thick. I mean, it was just, they were enormous.
Yeah, for Christmas, you could buy a house.
You literally could. Yes, a prefab home. And we loved that. And we loved it because from like JCPenney, you'd get some half decent clothes. Sears, my mom would always get us the tough skin jeans, which I swear were actually just like, you know, metal plates. I mean, they had no bend in them whatsoever. Right. They were so rigid.
I think the name kind of warned you initially. Yes,
yep. And I remember the NFL pajamas that they would sell. We'd get those every year. And I mean, we've traded it in for the internet, and the internet's all perfectly fine, but it's not the same. You take some of these catalogs, like you said, Farm and Fleet, for example, for Toyland, and you give that to one of the grandkids with a marker, and say, you know, circle the things that you want.
Oh, that'd be fun. I'd like to see that marker.
I mean, the whole thing ends up circled by the end of it, but you at least see what kind of caught their eye. Whereas, like last year, the grandson who was five at the time, I think. Said something like, I want the pizza Play-Doh bike thing. And we're like, the what?
Yeah.
And we had to look it up online. I don't know where he saw it. Probably one of the commercials on the Disney Channel or something. But it was a little trike with a pizza oven thing. It was a, you know, the delivery vehicles DoorDash uses, what, like the little box in the back.
Wow.
But with pizza ingredients. It was and you make the pizzas out of Play-Doh. But
that
they didn't
so
tell
cool.
you. But again, the phrase "some assembly required."
Yeah.
Not some. A full day of these little itty bitty screws into the plastic all around it. I've never felt more like I was working in a sweatshop than during that day. But the kid loved it. You know. So that's part.
I used to work at a department store, Arlen's, way back when. And I was in the toy department, and I had to put those wagons and bikes and everything together. Oh, I actually had to assemble them for display.
Some,
and then I'm traumatized to this day, by the way.
Got some assembly required. Yeah. You guys were mentioning as well that you're helping Pete Schwabe, our friend at Civic Media, bring back a movie that he did 20 years ago.
That's right. Yeah.
What's that about?
Pete's got a movie called The Godfather of Green Bay. And yes, it did come out in 2005.
It's a rom-com.
It is.
And Pete Schwabe is the star. He's the romantic interest.
He also directed it. He
wrote
the
plot as well.
Screenwriter.
It's a gorgeous film, actually. It's really nice. It captures Wisconsin, all the craziness. There's a guy in the movie that does the Macarena or the Pacarena, as we all know it here in the state. So it's a really wonderful film, and we're going to show it again.
Yeah, it's going to be at the Atwood Music Hall here in Madison on December 4th. That's a Thursday night at 7 p.m. And we're hoping for a good crowd there. Some of the proceeds will go to the Dane County Humane Society. And it should be a lot of fun. Pete's going to be there and talk a little bit about the movie and take some questions, I think, afterwards. And it's just going to be a great time. You know, Pete did a lot of work out in Los Angeles there for, I don't know, I think he lived there for a dozen years or maybe a little bit more. And but this was his attempt to get out into the
movie's about the a comedian world. Trying to be seen by Carson so they could be on the Carson show and become very successful. That's what it's about.
And very Pete did a lot of stand-up in his earlier life.
Boy, the things I learn about my coworkers. So it happens when you live 200 miles away from your coworkers. Exactly. Like John and Gordy, who are in person in Madison, catch their show on 92.7 WMDX or on the Civic Media app. Guys, thank you so much. Have a great week.
All right.
You too. Thank you, Pete.
All right. When we come back, we're going to replay our conversation with Tom Nelson, author of a book about the Edmund Fitzgerald on the 50th anniversary of its loss. That's coming up. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. As you know, today, November 10th, marks the 50th anniversary that 29 souls were lost in a Lake Superior shipwreck, the likes of which few thought we'd see in a modern era given the size and the power of freighters like the SS Edmund Fitzgerald. But there's more to the story than a really big, bad November storm. So here's our interview from August 11th with Tom Nelson about his book. The interview starts, by the way, with me referencing another more personal example of Mother Nature always being willing to show us who's in charge. I lost some technology for a while over the weekend when a lightning strike took out the cable and took out the internet. And it seemed like the perfect time to finish a book that I had started. And that book is written by Tom Nelson, the Outagamie County executive, former legislator. It's titled Wrecked, The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. And you can get more at msupress.org. We'll talk about that now with Tom Nelson, who joins us. Tom, how are you?
It's great to be on. This is wonderful.
It's good to see you, man. How have you been?
It's good. I can't believe it's just like old times. You know, we're going, you know, it was like about 20 years ago, I met Pat Kreitlow, always a fan back at WEAU, running for the state Senate, pulling off a big upset. And we've been best buds ever since. And now look at you. Look at this. You have this great radio program. Oh, wonderful.
Look at you writing a book. And I did promise when I had Kristen Lyerly on earlier that I would do two things. First, I would make sure to tell people to go look up the Dr. Kristen Lyerly show because she spent her entire show with Tom talking about the book. But then I also wanted to, I told her I would ask you, the book is co-written with Gerald, is it Podair? How do you say it?
Podair.
Podair. How much of this did he write? Because it's really good.
Yeah, thank you. I wrote the book, and he helped with the editing, a little bit of editing, and then also consulting. He had another book project, so he was limited in what he could do for this project, but he was absolutely indispensable. He was the one who encouraged me to do this in the first place because I came to him with three ideas, and the Fitzgerald book was actually number two or number three. I wanted to do something different, and he looked at this, and he said, you know what, Thomas? This is history. He's a professor emeritus of history at Lawrence University in Appleton. He's very well published, knows this area very well. And he explained, look, you know, this is history. History is taking a popular, maybe cultural event that occurred in the past and then helping it you explain a broader phenomenon, which is the heart of what this book's about. And if you've read it all, which thank you, congratulations, you're the first interviewer yet who says, I actually read the whole book, so kudos to you.
Thank you.
And makes the connection between those two. Plus, as you find out, there's brand new material, exclusive interviews, people related to the Fitzgerald sinking that have come forward for the first time, shedding light on some mysteries of what really happened that night,
before and after. Yeah, you went out, you knocked on doors and called on family members and other people who were tied to it, either, you know, attorneys and others to get these stories. Before we get to the metaphor, let's get to the ship itself, which for the behemoth that it was, and it was this workhorse for years and years, but it was clear that, like with other things, corporations sometimes took shortcuts without thinking about the safety of the workers.
Exactly. You got it right there. You nailed it in one sentence. And even though, and I think the reason why we haven't talked about these things is, you know, exactly for what you said, it was this behemoth, it was this workhorse, it was one of the largest ore ships on the lakes. But that also explains why it was not seaworthy, why it should not have set sail from Superior that night. The hull was a wreck. They had been tacked welding it for several seasons. It was known as a wet ship, which meant that it took on a lot of ballast and it kept it in there. And after seasons, when they would dig out the ballast hold, that sometimes there was up to 6 feet of dirt and sludge. So this ship was in no condition. The Coast Guard regulatory outfit, the American Shipbuilding Bureau, they knew it was in no shape to run, despite the fact that they continued to certify it. And as the attorneys found out and they brought to light through this deposition, they found one of the crew members, the only crew member who did not part of the Fitzgerald in 1975 season, but was not on the ship the night that it sank. And he spilled the beans. He put forward, he did so in a federal deposition in St. Paul in December of 1978. And so it has all been accounted for. And based on my research, which I believe I did extensive research, that this has only appeared in one other publication, and that was a Star Tribune story back in 1997. And I think it goes a long way in explaining the truth of what really happened, why it sunk. And so part of the purpose of this book was the metaphor, but also to bring some sense of justice to these families who were not done right by Ogilvy Norton and still have not 50 years later.
No, and again, the amount of settlement they got varied, again, depending like their representation. You talked with, I would say, legal legend Toby Markovich.
Exactly, up there in Superior. He had a big part.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's just larger than life and the role that he played. And then you even get into later the decision to retrieve the bell as a symbol, but also as a way to say, that's it, no more poking around, the wreck, leave this grave site undisturbed. But let's take it to, again, that metaphor for the post-war economy. Although I shouldn't say post-war economy, because there was just so much growth post-war. But I guess the right way to say it is, I think a lot of it was taken for granted. Mm-hmm. And that's when you started to see shortcuts. That's when you started to see, you really get into the notion of, we used to build ships. And then the thought was, well, we can just pay to have ships made elsewhere. And that was one of many indications of how our custodianship of the American economy started to turn.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And we see that all over the place. I think every small town, large town, not just here in Wisconsin, the Midwest, but across the country can relate with a bad boss and a bad company that did not invest properly in the company, allowed it to wither on the vine, succumbed to bad trade deals. And here we are today, where we have a manufacturing base that is hollowed out compared to what it was in 1957, the year that the Fitzgerald made its maiden voyage. And, I would like to say how far we've come and how much we've accomplished, but we have not. And the key decades were the 1960s and the 1970s that saw a precipitous decline in American manufacturing. And the Fitzgerald, as you put it, a metaphor, helps explain what happened to the Fitzgerald, why it sunk. But I also think, and this is one of the reasons why the Fitzgerald is top of mind 50 years later is because a lot of us can relate to the crew members and the families. Of course, the big difference is that they didn't come back from work, though, but they had a bad boss. Okay. They had a company that was not making proper investments and they paid the ultimate price.
We're talking to Thomas Nelson, Outagamie County executive, former legislator, now author of Wrecked, the Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. You can get it through the Michigan State University Press, msupress.org. And part of the reason I could not put this book down was that it isn't, again, you draw the metaphor, but you do it with what I would consider, how can I put it? It's both exhaustive and concise, a political history of how we got to these points. For example, you know, people think of Jimmy Carter, for example, as, you know, a typical Democratic president. Well, not exactly. And you get into the notion of, like Bill Clinton, the conservative Democratic presidents who were perhaps a little too eager to go along with, you know, what the corporate side of the economic equation wanted, the supply side rather than the worker side.
That's exactly right. And so when you're talking about Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, of course, that's post Fitzgerald, the Fitzgerald sank in 1975. And so by bringing that up, the legacy of Fitzgerald goes well beyond 1975, and not just because in terms of the mystery and the controversy that it generated, how did it sink that night? But it also goes a long way that the third act of this went into the Carter administration, where despite being a Democrat, there were the so-called neoliberal policies where you were focusing on the corporate side, tax cuts for the rich, bad trade deals and so forth. And then going into the Reagan administration, which put that on steroids, into Bill Clinton. And then after three administrations, Democrats and Republicans, we were by the turn of the century in 2000, left with a hollowed out manufacturing economy.
And then you get into the false choice of job growth versus environmental protection. And part of the center of this for anybody who is either from northern Wisconsin, from the Iron Range area, but all the way down to the Twin Cities where the reserve mining trial was, I mean, that was daily coverage of this huge taconite plant that was dumping. I mean, I forget how big you said the eventual spread of taconite tailings were polluting Lake Superior, and that, you know, for the longest time was, well, that's just the cost of business.
Exactly. And Judge Miles Lord, who is a federal judge, and I read through this again yesterday because I did a book talk up in Superior, and what he talked about is exactly that. You know, we should not have this false choice that this company should not use. The word he used was hostage, hold workers and this economy hostage, that you can have it both ways, that you can have a good environment, that you can have good jobs. Just as the late, great Gaylord Nelson said that the economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment. That's the relationship between the two. Judge Miles Lord understood that during that court case. And that's a big reason Chapter 3, which is called the lake they call Gichigumi. And that's important because that is where the ship sank. And it is the second largest lake in the world. This is not just your typical lake. And it's a big part of the legend of Fitzgerald because it's also in the first stanza of Gordon Lightfoot's song, the lake they call Gichigumi.
And in fact, Gordon Fitzgerald, you're right, even went so far as to change one of the lyrics later in life to make clear that, you know, when he has that lyric, the main hatchway caved in. Well, that may not have been the full story afterwards or after all. And so I really want to tip my cap to the late Gordon Fitzgerald or the late Gordon Lightfoot for telling that story. Yes. In just a couple minutes we have left here, where do you want to take this looking forward? If there was a message to go to public officials and to voters, if there's a lesson to glean from this moving forward in the American economy, what would you tell folks?
I would say, how many more times do we have to go through this? How many more Fitzgeralds do we have to struggle? This was 50 years ago, and you still see this example where you have bad bosses and you have bad companies that are not doing the right thing. They're either polluting our natural resources. They're not making proper investments so that they continue to have good paying family supporting jobs in these in these communities. And I think if you were to do two things, if you would recognize how we need to take care of our environment, take care of our workers, and then to know that we can have greatness again, that we can have a strong domestic shipbuilding program that can be the lifeblood of American effect in manufacturing while doing right by the environment and doing right by the workers. So I think that would be the central lesson, and then connected to that, that justice has yet to be served for these families, that we need to bring to light why the ship really did sink.
And so that never again we have to pull a church bell 29 times. Thomas Nelson, I know that this was a labor of love. You talk about the personal stake, your connection to all of this. And I hope that once all of this is all done, you find something else to write about, because it was wonderful work. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon. Thomas, thank
wonderful.
You.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
One quick note, there is now in this day and age plenty of data that's fed by 130 buoys and stations floating throughout the Great Lakes to help with forecasts. That network of buoys needs to be maintained. President Trump funded it for $0. He zeroed it out in his latest budget proposal if he were to have his way. We'll wrap things up here with Jane Mattiner next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Let us wrap things up as we always do on a Monday, checking in with Jane Mattiner from Mattiner on Air. Jane and Greg Bach can be heard at 9 o'clock, 9 to 11 weekdays here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jane Mattiner, good morning. How are
good
you?
Good morning, Pat and Parker. Happy Monday.
Did you have a good weekend?
I did have a good weekend. I accomplished some, you know, you get you in your head that I want to get this one thing done. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I got my clippers back, which is fair. This is how exciting I am. I dropped my clippers off to get sharpened, and I've been waiting for them for 2.5 weeks, and they were finally done. So Friday, before the weather started to turn, I actually got clipping, and I clipped the stuff that needed to get done. And so I felt a great sense of accomplishment.
That's great.
Yes. See,
you got to do those little things. Ours,
yes.
Yeah. Ours was
brought
doing
the hoses in.
Ooh. Yeah. We got the, yep. But that was, yeah, last weekend we did clipping. We did hoses. This weekend for us, it was a Christmas card, you know, get all the photos of the best of the year.
Wow.
And a Christmas letter to go along with a little annual update.
Oh, you do the Christmas letter.
We used to do it every year. And, of course, we were raising the girls, and there was always stuff to talk about. And then when we became empty nesters, it by and large, it was done on the back of one of those photo cards, just kind of the highlights. And this year, we're like, well, there's enough to talk about. You know, there was the trip to Portugal, which was really nice, and, you know, grandson graduating high school and things like that. So yeah, the letter's back. Some years, it's got a little bit more snark or a little more humor, or maybe you do a parody of, you know, the lyrics to Christmas carols. We've done those
in
the past.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yep. And, but this year is just kind of a straight update. You know, it's not a knee slapper. But there's just often times where you get a card and they've literally just scribbled, you know, their name at the bottom, and that's it. And it's like, well, I haven't heard from you all year. I have no idea what you're up to. Or if they do send something, like I was saying earlier, it's a photo of like just their kids or just their grandkids. I'm like,
right.
I want you. You're my friend. What's new with you? So, yeah, we definitely shared an update this year. What's your tradition, if you will?
I'm a terrible person. Just a bad person because I am one of the, it's a week before Christmas. Oh my God. As Christmas cards come in, I send mine out.
Oh, okay. So it's like just in time inventory. Okay.
Exactly.
This one in,
like, oh
that
God,
one goes out.
They sent me one. Okay. I got to send one. And as far as the Christmas letter goes, maybe it's because I'm so cynical, but to me, Christmas letters are like continual Facebook posts where
everything
is great.
Yes.
Here is how great my life is. We did this great trip. I would respect Christmas letters more if they were like, Uncle Fritz is still in prison. He's probably never going to get out. If you want to send him a card, you know, you can do that. I don't know. I guess I would just like a Christmas letter with a little more reality.
Yeah. That was actually one of my Christmas letters. The one that had like the most prep into it was when Facebook was relatively new. And so I did literally set it up to look like a series of Facebook posts.
Oh, that's cute.
Of status updates. You'd put the date on there, you know, oh, we went up north to such and such, and oh, you know, we went to visit grandma and grandpa, whatever the case may be. And that was a lot of work. It was fun to do, but yeah, you know.
See, my Christmas letter would be more like when I die, I have my funeral plans all written out already. I do, because my father was a mortician. Come on, there's nothing like preparation.
Sure.
So I've built in time for eulogy rebuttals.
Eulogy rebuttals.
I think that's an important piece. So because as soon as you die, you become a saint.
Yeah.
And we all know we're not saints.
So you want people to be able to step up to a podium and go, here's what Jane didn't tell you.
Exactly. Here's the thing she did that drove me crazy. It will help along with the grieving process, everyone.
It would.
You're just reminded of these little foibles.
Gosh,
right?
You're turning your funeral into the Chuckles the Clown episode from Mary Tyler Moore.
Yes. If there are no jokes at my funeral, I'm not going.
Oh, that's so good.
That's it.
You got it. You got this nailed down. Good for you. I can't imagine what all you're going to be talking about today, given the potential deal for getting rid of or ending the government shutdown, and whether that's a cave-in or what it is. And then, of course, we've got the newer update now that Donald Trump has now pardoned everybody who tried. First, it was all the January 6th, you know, domestic terrorists. And now it's the people who worked with him to plot a coup. And I don't know why we don't use that word more, because that's what it was, people. And so it includes Kenneth Chesbro and Jim Troupas, the lawyers from Wisconsin, all the fake electors and all that. None of it applies, because they're charged with state crimes by the Wisconsin Department of Justice. None of them are charged with federal crimes, but they've been given a pardon by Trump in case of any federal crime. So, you know, just in case people are wondering how that effort to crack down on people who plotted a coup is going, it's going nowhere.
Well, I think it's a pretty easy going forward now. If you crime on behalf of Donald Trump, you'll get a pardon.
Yes.
If you crime for the rule of law, they're going to go after you.
Right.
Right.
It's simple. It is.
It's pretty easy. It's a pretty easy equation there.
Yeah.
And yes, so we're going to talk about Pardonpalooza and and SNAP. Where are we with SNAP benefits? They're on, they're off, they're on, they're off. Governor, I love Governor Evers' response was essentially no.
No. No, what do you want to do? He loaded up the cards. People bought groceries over the weekend, and all Donald Trump was saying is, hey, if you're a poor family, we need you to take the groceries you bought and take them back to the grocery store because I say so.
Unmake that meatloaf that you made for dinner last night and take the ingredients back.
I have a feeling the reaction would be a lot like the reaction Donald Trump got when he went to the Washington Commanders football game yesterday. And if you haven't seen the video of that or heard the boos and watched all the birds, treat yourself, because he was not given the welcome he maybe expected, like what he gets at a NASCAR event or something like that.
Or at his own ballroom.
Or in his ballroom, yes.
Where he enters the room.
That's the guy taking food off the tables here. Jane has all that and more, along with Greg Bach, Matt and Air on Air, just after the news here at 9 o'clock. Thank you, Jane.
See you guys. See you next week.
All right. Thanks. Have a wonderful start to the week. Parker, thank you for everything as always. Thanks to today's guests, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Selena Heller, Jenny Maurer from Head Start Wisconsin, Sports Director Jimmy Koska, John and Gordy, Jane Mattenair there, and Tom Nelson, and all of you for being here this morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. Enjoy your Monday. See you back here bright and early tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.